I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
But he was super motivated to sell at that point. He essentially had to get them done. He was going to lose a couple of other things if he wasn't able to shift these. So I ended up picking them up for 88 grand a unit and picked them up for 440 for the lot.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tyrone Shum, and in this episode, we're speaking with award-winning Property Investor of the Year, Sam Gordon. With a track record of 20 properties under the age of 30, we'll learn about purchasing properties in packs, how applying strata tiling generates over $150,000 of equity, and why it literally pays to know people. To kick things off, Gordon recaps the story of how he found the original four pack of units in a regional town and how that led to this purchase of the pack of five.
This was a funny one. So when I went for my little kind of round Australia almost trip looking at property, this was one of the ones that I actually went to have a look at originally. So it was overpriced. I tried to work it really, really hard to get it for the right money, and it just didn't come together. And off the back of this one, that's when I was brought the original four pack that I bought, who was from the same vendor. But that one needed a little bit of work, and he didn't want to put the capital into it, which would have had to have been his own money to then split it with his wife that he was, you know, getting divorced with. So this one was already in pretty good nick. It didn't actually need the renovation works or no time in the immediate, you know, future was any renovation works really required. So really this one was just being picked up I was trying to just get it below market. This was the one that was all in one line. So it hadn't been individually titled yet. So there was a bit of opportunity there for a bit of forcing some value on the asset as well. But he was overpriced. So at the time, I think he was chasing about, was he chasing? He was chasing over 600,000, I think, for each one. So yeah, for about 120, 125,000 a unit, I think his intention to try and pick them up for, which in my opinion is probably what the renovated properties would be worth. You know, around about that 125 is a renovated property value, and that's individually titled, which these ones weren't yet. So the value wasn't there in the deal. He was overpriced, and he ended up pulling them off the market with the intention that he was going to keep them and potentially renovate and individually title them himself. I think the plan was he was going to buy his partner, his ex-wife out for these deals. So, but that obviously didn't come to fruition.
Yeah, unfortunately for him. And we did talk about it in detail the last episode about that. It was quite an interesting thing that happened there. And interestingly thing, you know, it sat there for 6 months, right? And he couldn't, you know, sell it. So he took it off the market, brought it back on, and, you know, still no one. And what's fascinating is at that point in time, you know, there's so many political changes, election had come, COVID hit. So, you know, it wasn't good timing. So you came in and you said, look, you know, I'm willing to take these on because I purchased your other set here. Would you consider this?
That's pretty much the way it worked. And it was funny because it was when I was down and renovating the other two. So I'd already renovated the first two of the other units and I was going down and renovating the second two. And that's when I called the agent up. I was actually looking for a deal for one of my clients. And when I was there, I picked up another deal for one of my clients. It was a similar kind of set up to the first one I'd purchased. So it was three at the front and then three two-bedders at the front and then a three-bedder at the back. And then, and I said to the agent when we bought this one, so that one was off market as well. And then I said to the agent when we bought that one, I said, what about that old five pack that fella had? What do you ever do with them? And he just kind of gave me this bit of a long-winded story about everything that was going on. And then he kind of got to the end of it and he goes, so in the end, he didn't sell it. He thought he was going to try and keep it. And I go, oh, maybe, yeah, hit him up, see what he wants to do with them. And then when he hit the owner up, he goes, oh, mate, I've been thinking about calling you all this stuff's going on at the moment. I'm thinking about cutting them. And he goes, well, mate, I've got this young fella here who bought the last set off you. He goes, you know, like, what do you reckon? What are you willing to do them for? And he was still trying to get, in the very high, what was he trying to get? I think he was trying to get it was around like 500, 550 or something like that. Like it was pretty crazy money what he was kind of chasing for an unrenovated product that wasn't individually titled. And they were probably worth, even unrenoed, they have sold before around about that, probably around 105 to 110K per unit. So still, he probably wasn't too far off the mark when he was talking around about that, you know, low to mid fives, around that 520 to 550. But he was super motivated to sell at that point. He essentially had to get them done. He was going to lose a couple of other things if he wasn't able to shift these. So I ended up picking them up for 88 grand a unit and picked them up for 440 for the lot.
He must have been going, oh crap. But no, I mean, I think it's a win-win situation when you think about it, because, you know, if he didn't sell up and get some cash here, he would have been in more trouble for the other things that he was, you know, motivated to do.
That's it. Yeah, he was running into his issues, man. He wanted $1. He was never going to get it. So if you wanted to actually sell him, he had to be realistic about it and just take essentially what was on the table.
Absolutely. And that's market. You know, if you meet the market, you have a sale. If you don't, then you hold on to it for the next 12 months, you know, a year, more plus. So
yeah. That's it, man. That's it.
Fantastic. All right. So now you purchased them. Let's talk a little bit about the differences. So we're comparing the four pack that you purchased and the four pack that you purchased of those units. Four units already had titled on them, which is great. So that was very easy for you to actually go in, just do the renovations and then rent them out. But this particular five pack, as you said, it's on a one title. Just curious, first, let's paint the picture of how big was this block? I guess five out of the five, how many were renovated or not renovated, you know, all that kind of details. Maybe just paint that picture first.
Yeah, definitely. So the other block, which was older, the four pack, it was around about 1960s build, I think, whereas this one was a 1980s build. So it was newer. It was still original. Some of them had slightly updated bathrooms and slightly updated floorings and whatnot, but all the kitchens were still original, but they were bigger units. So I think I couldn't even tell you what kind of square meters they were. I can't even remember. But these ones were quite big and spacious units. So they were pretty good on that side of things. And still in pretty good nick. Definitely didn't need any work. Didn't have the old shag pile carpet like the other ones it had. Definitely didn't have any peeling roofs or anything like that. As is. The only difference was that all five of these were two bedders, whereas the other one had the one three bedder at the back. That was still all on one title, still all running on one title at that point.
Yeah, great. So now that you've actually purchased that and it's got one title and the, you know, units are they fully tenanted at this point in time?
I think there was one or two vacant at that point when I bought it. I think a tenant might have been going into one of them at the point and one of them, the rear one, was vacant, because I remember we went around and had a good look through all of them. The rear one was vacant.
Okay. So at this point in time, did you actually just purchase it with one of the vacant and you're just waiting to do renovations on it? Or did you actually get tenants all into all of them?
Yeah, look, the intention was, I was thinking about going down there and doing the other reno, but I was getting busy. Like, I was quite busy in the business at the time, and it was kind of different timing compared to when I'd done the last renovation. So I wasn't able to kind of get the time off. So all I decided to do was just to lease it out, and we're still getting good rents on them. So I wasn't too perturbed, because it was because they were bigger units, and because it was in a bit of a better part of town as well. It was quite close to the city center, this one. So yeah, we rented it, like they rented out at quite good rents for what they were in terms of purchase price as well.
Fantastic. All right, so you weren't able to get down to do the rents. Then what did you actually do on the property then since then? Because you've obviously been busy, but you've been busy shuffling some paperwork from what I hear.
Yeah, I did. So these ones, this one was good. So this is the ones that I put through and actually individually titled them. And it was quite an interesting process, because I've done other developments before, small developments as well, but I'd never actually done strata titling across a set of units. And the beauty of I guess the process is learning all the different people you can speak to and really finding guns in their field at different things, which is something I kind of pride myself in the ability at, is going and finding people that are really bloody good to work with. And I came across this town planner. He actually came to me through my property manager. He was kind of a friend of the property manager, and he wasn't really doing any small scale stuff anymore. He was kind of more into like some kind of larger lot subdivisions and some of his own works and stuff. He was almost like retired from really helping other people so much, but he did it to me because my property manager was managing both my blocks, and he helped me out. And he goes, "Oh, you should just speak to this guy. He's been in the area for like 3 years. He knows it like the back of his hand." And he knew about a certain way of titling them that no one else was really, none of the other town planners that I'd spoken to had let me in on, and or maybe didn't. I don't even think they really knew. It was the fact that at that point in time, they weren't making us do fire ratings through to the ceilings. So the other block that I bought that had been individually titled about 5 years before, they'd made them put the fire rated gyprock through to the roof. There'd been a legislation change and they weren't going to the same sort of extremes of allowing to do them at that point. And essentially they were allowing you to put it in without the fire rating all the way through to the roof. Yeah, it was a bit of a different setting. But really what it came back to was they changed the law to allow it to be passed as almost like grandfathered, right? They approved it way back when in the day. The council approved it way back when in the day, and they were happy to approve it based on the same, the same conditions and everything, and the same, I guess, planning laws that were in place all the way back then. So we're able to kind of get it grandfathered and push through on that side of things. Now that one phone call and being able to speak to that fella between five units, that's four fire ratings through the ceiling that I was going to have to put through, saved me about $15,000 not having to go down that avenue.
That's what I was going to say, because that cost, yeah, it makes a huge difference.
Yeah, well, that's it, mate. And this is one of the things, like I actually factored it into my numbers, and I said to the, it was one of my key negotiating tactics was that I was like, man, I'm going to have to put fire rating through the ceilings here. I found out after I bought it, I didn't have to. That was just extra, extra cream in the deal. It was extra fat in the deal. So I was laughing on that one.
That's amazing. Yeah, I've been through that stage as well, because when I was looking at doing the renovations for my units down in where I've got a property in Victoria, I wanted to actually subdivide those two units above. And they said to me, look, if you want to do it, you're going to have to put fire rating in. And plus, because it is a 1960s, 1950s building as well too, it's been renovated on the external, so it looks good on that side of things. But internally, it didn't match any of the fire ratings. So they said, look, if you were to do it properly, you'd have to actually put a double rated wall. And she said, it's $5,000 there, 15K there for five. That's $5,000 each. Mine would have cost about 10K because we had to actually redo and restructure a lot of things. So that's a big, big difference. And especially in these regional towns, you can't see these walls.
It's so true, mate, honestly. And a lot of the regional towns, to get trades to do that sort of stuff as well can be quite expensive, and trying to find the right guys to do it, it can be a bit of a headache. So to be able to work around that one, I was pretty happy to say the least.
Coming up after the break, Gordon explains how his five units were originally a commercial loan.
I was max borrowing capacity as well in terms of any sort of decent mainstream lender that probably would have done me up to four, like on the last one. But yeah, when you go into five, pretty much all five plus unit blocks, they all fall under that commercial lending space.
How he loves investing in regional areas.
One beautiful part of investing regionally is your land component. Your actual rateable land value is very low being in a regional area.
He shares what's next on his to-do list.
For now, if any other good deals like that come up, they'll be going towards the client base. I'm looking back towards, I'm in a couple of capital cities at the moment, picking up a few very select different properties that we're making some good margins on the way in on and kind of manufacturing really good yields on.
And that's next. I'm Tyron Shum, and you're listening to Property Investory. Are you interested in finding great deals like Sam Gordon does? If the answer is yes, then let Sam help you find them, since he does this all day, every day. When you work with Sam, he'll include a strategy session to help you put together an actionable property plan to help you build your portfolio just like him. Simply text 0499881040 and quote APS. Gordon shares how long the fire ratings took him to get approved And it's all done and dusted yet at this point.
That's all gone through. That's all stamped. The whole reason I do them like that as well is I can refi the capital back out of the deal. So I buy them all in one line, individually title them, and then I'm able to pull the capital back out of the deal. So yeah, that was I got council approval for that. That was a few months ago actually that I got that one through. So it was a couple of month process that the town planner had to engage a surveyor to actually survey the sites and everything. We had to get that through. We had to get those plans stamped by council and then get them through land titles as well to get it kind of all stamped and all crossed off on and ticked off on and all the rest of it. So it was a good few months kind of process, but it was definitely a good result on the back end of it as well.
That's great. And all you had to do was pick up the phone, right, and just call people.
Pretty much, yeah. I think he charged me about it was about $3,500 or something with his costs, and then he just kind of sent me the bills when they came through from like the surveyor and everyone and land titles and whatnot, and he pretty much handled the whole process. It was perfect.
That is so good.
Pays to know people, right? Like that literally came from the property manager who'd known this guy since they were kids, and because the property manager was managing my 9 units and my other clients 4 units, and then we were looking to pick some other deals up in there as well. Like he knew it was continual business, so he was hoping, yeah, he was looking after me, and it all goes around full circle, looking after him, keeping the managements and whatnot. So
for sure he'd be stoked now. He'd be like, yep, Sam, your client for life now.
Man, literally, he rings me off markets. He prospects his clients that own the unit blocks to try and bring them to me. It's mad. It's so good.
That's awesome. See, that's the power of networking, the power of actually having these relationships. And that's why, Sam, from the last episode, you said that's so key to actually have these relationships. My gosh. Awesome. So now you've got 5 units. What's been the process next? You said that you've already gone back to the bank, have you, to refinance it already?
Yeah, mate, I've already put them through. Yeah, put them through the bank. Once the titles pretty much came out, I just ordered the revals and got them done, because I know I was tracking what they were selling for in the area as well. And most of the sales for that similar sort of product was up around about $110,000 for that size unit, about $110,000 unrenovated, about $135,000 renovated, because they were quite big, these ones, because I was able to refi them onto individual loans, being the 5 units, that was a commercial lending, and then being able to bring them back to individual loans, that brought it back to residential lending. So I brought out I pulled out a bulk of my money, and obviously had a much lower interest rate, to go with it as well.
You said that it was originally a commercial loan. So how did that work first? So firstly, when you purchased the 5, was that put on a commercial loan initially?
You can get some lenders that will go resi up to 4 units on one title, depending on where they're located. But yeah, like I was max borrowing capacity as well in terms of any sort of decent mainstream lender that probably would have done me up to 4, like on the last one. But yeah, when you go into 5, pretty much all 5+ unit blocks, they all fall under that commercial lending space. So yeah, man, just kind of put them through that, put the loan through a commercial. And then once it was all done, the individual titling had gone through, then we did the refi process and withdrew the money.
And how hard was that?
If I had time to do the, renovation as well, obviously I would have been able to force more and pull it back out. But work's got me busy enough in the business, man, sourcing other people's deals. So I'll have to save that reno for another day.
Don't worry, you don't need to touch that one for now. If it's getting good income, you've refinanced, you got 90 days later to think about it.
That's exactly right.
So does that mean that every single unit now has its own individual title, which means its own individual loans, which is under your names or each individual one or whichever entity you've chosen? Is that how that works?
Yeah, I trade them through entities. So one beautiful part of investing regionally is your land component, your actual rateable land value is very low being in a regional area. So I like to chop. So the beautiful part of that is if you have it in, say, in a trust, your land tax component is going to be very, very low, but you have that added benefit of having it in a trust and arm's length from you as well, as, tax benefits of being able to distribute, your profits wherever you want. So yeah, like I hold those assets definitely in trust.
Great. Yeah, it's obviously we're not giving any legal advice, but that's very interesting just to be able to understand how that strata titling process works, because it's also a fascinating part. Like if you can buy a block of units like what Sam's done and then split them up individually, there is actually quite a lucrative way of doing it. And as you've just heard, if you find the right people, it's actually not too time consuming to do, because you rely very heavily on other people to help you to do that. And obviously, you know, now that you've drawn out, you've got a lot more equity. You can actually pull that funds out to go and invest into other properties or other more deals, as you've said.
Yeah, definitely, man. That's it. You want to keep, it's like that, it's like the velocity of money, right? Like how is it staying stagnant, or are you able to pull it out and keep putting it into more deals? So I think it's, I think it's hugely important to not get too tied up with any transaction, to be able to pull those funds back out and keep moving forward.
For sure. So I'm also curious about the other deal that you got for your client, another block of units. What are those like? Just tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, that was a little bit different. Funnily enough, so the unit, it wasn't all units. So there was a little two-bedroom house at the front that had been renovated. And then there was two-bedroom units and then a three-bedroom unit at the back. They were all in pretty original condition, barring the house had some renovations through it. It had a new bathroom, new kitchen, and nicely polished floors and whatnot. One of the units had updated flooring and whatnot throughout, but then the others were pretty original, pretty standard. And that was $374,000 for those. The two-bedroom house, two-bedroom units, and a big three-bedder at the back. So pretty similar numbers to my first one, just the front one's a house, not a unit. So, and that obviously draws a little bit higher rent, having the that front one being being a house, not a unit, and being detached from the others as well.
Yeah. So does that mean then potentially that an investor, I don't know if there's any potential, but you could subdivide that one, right? And then sell off the house at the front and then just keep the units. Do you think that's possible for something like that?
Well, it is exactly the same as the other units. So when you strata title the other units, like my five pack, I could sell all those off individually now if I wanted to. And it'd be the same with their scenario as well. You could definitely strata title. It'd be the similar, you could do the strata or community title, all of them off individually, and yeah, definitely sell the house off.
Yeah, it's very unusual to hear a house with some units on the back though. I don't really...
It was a different deal, man. It was very different, hey, but it was cool.
Do you know how come that came about? Was it something like that? They had a block of land and, you know, the owners just purchased all of them and just bundled in a unit on there.
No, it was an old builder, an old like Italian builder or something back in the day. They lived in the front house, he and his wife and his kids, I think. And then they built they were just additional income stream. They built the two-bedders and the three-bedder, and it was just seen as additional income. They had their little yard fenced off, and then the others had kind of free rein of the rear area. So it was cool. It was different. It was definitely a different prospect to either of mine, but it was cool. And they were very happy with the deal. They flew down to a nearby airport and drove over and had a look at them, and yeah, they were very impressed as well. So it was good, man. It was a good deal.
So as I was saying, Sam, what's next for you now that you've already titled, got your titles for the five pack, you've got four units already renovated downstairs, so you've got total nine down in this regional town. What's next for you?
I've probably got enough exposure in this little regional town for now. I do love the place, and there's obviously some really good returns, but for now, if any other good deals like that come up, they'll be going towards the client base. I'm looking back towards, I'm in a couple of capital cities at the moment, picking up a few very select different properties that we're, you know, making some good margins on the way in on, and kind of manufacturing really good yields on. So I'm kind of working in that space at the moment, just looking to continually add some cash flow into the portfolio, just kind of keep building that in as well.
Okay, well, I mean, you've got quite a number of properties in your portfolio at this point in time. Just wondering, like, I guess, how do you know at what time do you actually switch out and do a different play? Because this is the challenge. Like, you know, you say, for example, at the beginning, you accumulate portfolio of properties. For example, the client that we talked to in the previous episode was accumulate, say, seven properties. And that, you know, is the accumulation phase. But when do you get to a point where you go, okay, we might need maybe, you know, a cash flow property, or we should get another growth property? How do you know when those times are right and then, you know, fit that into the portfolio?
It's either for me personally or for a client.
Not for you personally.
For me personally, I'm probably at the point where I have enough equity in the portfolio that so I run development deals. Like, I always have a development play on the go at any one time, because I just like to have a big chunk deal kind of churning in the background at any one time. But I like to pick up the high cash flow deals in good capital city locations. But I'm kind of more targeting the cash flow side now. It's not so much for me about the rinse and repeat of equity and continually pulling equity out and rolling it. I did that in probably the first 6 or 7 years of my portfolio. At the moment, at the point that I'm in now, I'm probably more geared towards still picking up good good, strong assets in good locations, but making sure they have a good cash flow that goes with them as well. I'm picking up a lot of those at the moment. Well, not a lot of those, but I've been picking up a few of those, and that's probably the strategy going forward. Let's keep building the income base. Like a lot of the deals we're doing at the moment on an 80% lender are over $15,000 plus per annum positive in a capital city. I'm more than happy to pick, you know, two or three of those up every year while I'm just running the business and just, you know, run a few of those on the side every year. And I'm happy with those and my development, you know, I kind of start one every 18 to 24 months, just kind of keep running those, keep picking up my high cash flow deals. And I'm happy with that, mate. Just keep building other people's portfolios, you know, that's what I love.
Oh, I love that. It's fantastic to be able to hear that, you know, amazing side of things, because when you get to that stage, it's a completely different ball game. As you said, you know, it's using your equity to be able to do that. So from what I'm gathering, you're leveraging off your equity to be able to just buy these development sites, do the development deal, and then you keep and hold those developments, or do you sell off some of those to pay down things?
It really depends on what they are. There's certain deals that I do hold on to. So if I develop certain properties that are going to have a good cash flow attached to them as well, I'll always look to retain those if possible. But it's 50-50. So 50% of the deals I'll hold, and then the other 50% I'll flip them back to the market. And the funds that I had into that development to roll that, you know, to start and complete that development, I keep them rolling into another development to keep the cash profits coming. Or if I hold that deal, I refinance my capital back out and keep moving. But the profits, if I ever, like when I take the profits out during a sale, almost every single time I go and dump that into a high cash flow asset. Because if I can go and take $150,000, $200,000 from a small development, and I can go and dump that into two high cash flow deals that each one's producing me $15,000 plus positive, every year I'm throwing another $30,000, you know, passive income into the portfolio. I don't really see how you lose on that side of things. So it takes a while to get to this point in the portfolio. I think the foundations are hugely important to build first. You need to walk into a strong growth cycle with a good little portfolio of properties to then get to the stage that I'm at now. And I honestly think that's a good, strong path forward moving down that avenue.
Yeah. I mean, I got this saying from one of my mentors is buy some, build some, keep some, and sell some. So yeah, that's what you're doing, because you know you're developing it, you're building it, and then you're putting the money back in to be able to keep some of these that generate the positive cash flow. So yeah, it's so true. I mean, it's such simple fundamental foundations behind all of this, but I think a lot of people just get confused because there's just so much that goes on. In actual fact, like maybe if you wouldn't mind sharing with the listeners, time wise, like how much time do these kind of things take? Because I know you've got multiple clients on the go, you're helping them find all these deals. It's probably, you know, taking a majority of time, but a lot of people don't see the behind the scenes. People don't even know realistically how long things take. How long does it actually take you to actually put together a deal, like, you know, for example, like a cash flow deal that you found for that one?
The cash flow deals, I probably put together probably like one, max two cash flow deals a month. Is probably realistically what I put together, just because to get the highest return on investment, to get the deals that really spit off a huge amount of positive cash flow, I need to find that deal below market. And to find that deal below market to start with is a lot of work in itself. And then from there, obviously then I'm manufacturing the additional yield on top of it as well through different strategies. So there's definitely a lot of work involved in that side of things. And you know, all the deals do take time. Like, it doesn't matter what I'm working on. I work very hard on each deal to make sure it's got, you know, plenty of fat in it. Definitely. I kind of pride this when I say this to my client. I'm quite proud of saying this when I say to my clients, a deal will never pop up in your email, or I'm never going to call you about a deal that I wouldn't buy myself. And I think with the portfolio I've built, I'm pretty confident I've got a pretty strong portfolio myself. If I wouldn't buy a deal, you know, or if I'm bringing a deal to a client, I'm pretty confident in that deal as well, and that it's something that they should be buying, something that's got really good merit to it, good capital on the way in, and good cash flows associated with it as well. So,
yeah, and that's what I love about working with you as well too, Sam, is because your due diligence process has obviously got to where you are now with your portfolio that you've built up. And if you haven't done all that kind of stuff, you know, it's very hard for you to be able to offer that kind of, you know, skill set to be able to give to your clients, because, you know, you haven't done it if you haven't, you know. So I think that's the great thing about what you've done is you've actually been on the ground. You've actually been there, you know, getting involved in the renovations, speaking to the agents, and really, really negotiating the best you can, not only just for yourself, but you've been doing it for your clients. And that has, you know, truly shown, because through all these stories that you share with me, a lot of them have been so, so interesting that they just go, wow, you know, I don't know how he pulled those off.
Mate, all good things take time, right? And I think all good deals, that, you know, they take a lot of, it's not even, a lot of people think, you know, it's once you find the deal, but so often, like, I literally will negotiate until the property goes unconditional. You ask pretty much any of my clients, I keep working on a deal. Like, they sometimes give them a call and say, by the way, we just got, you know, this much extra offered. And I think they love that I'll, because I do that for my own stuff, right? Like, I literally, it's like fighting to the death until that thing goes unconditional, anything's still on the table.
If you learn a lot from the episode, stay tuned for future episodes where Sam Gordon and I will continue to share with you more property stories from his own journey. Also, did you know when you work with Sam, he'll include a strategy session to help you put together an actionable property plan to help you build your portfolio just like him? Having a solid plan is the difference between success and failure. Simply visit australianpropertyscout.com.au and fill out the contact form, or text 0499 88 10 40 and quote APS. Thanks for listening.